You're listening to the Bet the Board Monday podcast edition as we'll highlight the Rams 49ers game later this evening on Monday Night Football. But before we get there, you'll hear the voice of Payne Insider in just a matter of seconds. I'm your co-host, Todd Furman. And Payne, what a weekend that we've almost put to bed in the NFL. One, a lot of sportsbook operators around this fine earth probably would rather forget.
Yeah, absolutely. Geno Smith, that was quite the play there to end the game. I know sportsbooks didn't like that. And right around that same time, you had the Dolphins and Packers. Looked like that game on the last play not only middled it, but it went over. Sportsbooks were not happy about that at all. Rough start to the day.
I do like how you conveniently leave out the other game late in the day between the Redskins and Cardinals, one that you benefited from immensely, having laid the early number with the 3 on Arizona. A game, again, that went over the total on a pick 6 that probably shouldn't have been thrown by Kirk Cousins, and then, of course, allowing the favorite to get that late front door cover.
It was a nice play. Obviously, though, it required a semi-back door from Washington. Arizona was up 10 late in that game. With the ball driving, Kirk Cousins kind of backdoored his way into that game. So I didn't feel too bad about the pick 6 late.
No, I mean, you probably shouldn't. And to your credit, you did grab the best of the number. So worst case scenario, you were looking at a push. Had you come over the top and laid 4.5 or 5 with Arizona, it would have been a much more precarious situation. But as we saw yesterday, and I guess the first topic that I wanted to bring up with you, some of the biggest line moves in recent memory on an NFL card, maybe aside from week 1, you saw the Buffalo Bills go from a 3-point underdog to a 1.5-point chalk. You saw the Philadelphia Eagles go from a 3-point favorite all the way down to pick in some locations for the Sunday night game. Saw the Seahawks go from 7.5 as high as 10. And then, of course, that aforementioned Packers-Dolphins game where you could have taken 3.5 with Miami early in the week, did get as low as 1.5 before it came back up, closing 2.5. And last but not least, Minnesota and Detroit, of course, a lot of that contributed injury steam with Calvin Johnson and Reggie Bush sideline. But all the games go against the move, so if you happen to wait those market moves out and went opposite the side of steam, you had a pretty profitable day when you talk about the way the NFL card sorted itself out.
Yeah, absolutely, and I think, number one, when you talk about things like that, sharp guys lose too, and I think that's one thing that definitely is not on the mind of recreational bettors or casual bettors. I know you have your Pros versus Joes tweet every week, and I think recreational bettors automatically think every side the sharp guys are on are going to win. And at the end of the day, we're looking to hit 55, 56, 57%. That's what we look to do. And so there's always going to be that 45% that lose. So that's first things first. And then you always have different types of groups battling. For instance, when you talk about the Detroit Vikings game, there was a number of math professionals that slated that game. I know we talked about it on the podcast, even with the injuries, Detroit -3 in that spot. So they were coming back. You also have professionals that were on both sides of that game. Those are easy, scalpable games. So you see moves like that. And again, I think sometimes you get too much of a move to where there's value on the other side. And again, it's always key to get the best of the number. When we talk about the game in my backyard, professionals did take 3.5 early in the week with the Dolphins. That number covered. If you waited till Sunday, you likely pushed or lost the game. So again, it's key getting the best of the number. And it's also key to remember that sharp guys don't win every single bet that they're placing. And I think that's one thing that gets lost upon the recreational bettors.
I definitely think that's a great point you raise. And people automatically assume that with the connotation of pro, that somehow the guys that are doing this for a living are hitting 75 to 80% of their bets, which just isn't the case. As any of us know that have been in the business long enough, you want to win your biggest positions, you want to grind out a profit, and there are going to be weeks, days, weeks, or even months where you just want to try and break even before you catch a little wind in your sail and have the opportunity to profit handsomely. The point about different groups being on opposite sides, definitely well received. And I think when I send that tweet out on Sunday, it definitely rubs people the wrong way. When I call some of the recreational bettors' positions the so-called Joe angle, the reality of it is they're going to win, maybe not as often as the pros, but there will be opportunities for them to cash some of those tickets, especially on a day like yesterday that sportsbooks would rather soon forget. Talk a little bit about some of the decisions that came through. I can say, having spoken to a number of people this morning, that there is a ton of parlay liability going to the 49ers on the money line this evening. You've seen that number go from 3.5 down to 3, some sharp money there, but we'll get into that with much greater detail in a second. As far as games and what you actually saw, Payne, what really jumped off the page as far as learning about teams both in the good and bad categorization?
Well, I think we learned an absolute ton about the Dallas Cowboys. At this point, you know, hopefully they don't spurn me for saying this, but they were the dominant side in that game yesterday. It would have been a crime if they did not win. When you look up and down the box score, when you look up and down every facet of that game, they dominated. 23 first downs, and when we talk about the way to beat Seattle, it's typically not dinking and dunking. It's you're not going to be successful picking up those third downs. The Cowboys were 10 for 17 on third down. They were super impressive to me. Now, I know Seattle, short week, traveled across the country, but this is a team that does not lose at home, and it was just very impressive to see not only the Cowboys just hang around but win this game after starting down double digits.
Yeah, I think when you talk about Dallas and their performance, definitely pretty impressive. What we've grown to expect from the Cowboys is they thrive in spots where a lot of people will put them down, think they're going to struggle quite a bit. At the same time, it'll be interesting to see how they handle prosperity with a big divisional game coming up this weekend against the New York Giants, something that we'll, of course, talk about in much greater detail as we get towards the Thursday podcast. I guess, though, Payne, the one team that I really wanted to talk about is Jacksonville. They needed a backdoor to finally break their 0-5 against the spread mark. But from watching that football game against the Titans, I'll say that what I've seen from the Jags, this is a team on the up that's really going to improve over the back half of the schedule. I know we talked a little bit before coming on the pod about how Bortles seems to have grown a lot more comfortable with his young wide receiving core.
Yeah, he's really found a guy that he likes in Allen Robinson, and he's going to him quite frequently. This game that I watch, I know a lot of people will talk about the back door, but really two turnovers in the red zone for the Jacksonville Jaguars, one late on a Cecil Shorts fumble and then an interception by Bortles in the third quarter. Jacksonville absolutely dominated this game. Talk about 27 first downs to Tennessee's just 14. So Jacksonville was pretty impressive, and again, I think the market at some point, there's just going to be a lot of value on them. We talked about it. There'll probably be value on them this week as a home dog at 4.5 points. So that was one team that was impressive to me. Another team that kind of disappointed, and I know they showed a valiant effort, but at some point the Dolphins just have to start winning these games. They're loaded with talent, and I think a lot of people around the country don't understand how loaded they are with talent. You talk about one of probably the best defensive lines in all of football. A lot of people think their offensive line isn't very good, but it's constructed so much differently this year. When you talk about two Pro Bowlers, three first-round picks on that offensive line, they just have to start winning these games. The problem is below-average coaching, below-average quarterback, and this is a game that they really should not have lost.
Well, you talk about one guy that probably won't argue that about them having an underrated defensive line. That'll be Aaron Rodgers, who was under duress the better portion of that game. To his credit, withstood the barrage and was able to lead Green Bay down the field for a last-second win. May say more about the Packers, and I know we talked during the game about the luxury it is when you have an elite-level quarterback that allows you to go for it on 4th-and-1 at midfield when all the momentum's going against you and a chance to kind of stem the tides.
Yeah, absolutely. That was a one-man show yesterday. It was Aaron Rodgers and not much else. Talk about a Dolphins team, again, gets down early in the game. They haven't started fast. That's been a big problem for them. But late in that game, you go up 7 points. Backers that are getting 3, 3.5 are not expecting that game to even be close. Some questionable calls late again by Philbin, even on the last play of the game, having a guy like Philip Wheeler out there in coverage, knowing that's the weak link. So a lot of questionable stuff from the Dolphins, and really Green Bay, one-man show. Aaron Rodgers just allows them to do so many things. When you talk about that last drive, just the touchdown in itself is ridiculous. The fake snap is ridiculous, but you convert a 4th-and-10 in that drive. You can convert a 3rd-and-10 in that drive. Green Bay is just a one-man show. It just really just kind of talks about this NFL and the way it is. You have to have a quarterback to be good. It camouflages so many inefficiencies that teams have.
Well, it's funny that you use the word inefficiency there, because a team that defined inefficiency played last evening, and that was the New York Football Giants, getting absolutely boat raced in Philadelphia. Where, of course, again, one of the sharper line moves, you saw the Giants bet from +3 all the way down to 1. Of course, I'll call it what it was. It was really a no-show, a team that looked outmatched right from the onset. Eli Manning, pretty pedestrian, 13-23 for 150 yards. Of course, the big news that comes out of there, not necessarily the Giants' loss, but losing Victor Cruz for the entire season, their number one receiving threat. I guess that just means that you're going to have some of the younger guys in the form of Reuben Randle, Odell Beckham, really need to step up if the Giants are going to be a threat in this NFC East division.
Yeah, unfortunately I was able to avoid that cluster somewhat with the Giants. I know the position was taking 3. I didn't get it, fortunately. it looked like an overvalued spot. Obviously, the Giants come in looking like $1 million. Even though Philadelphia was at 4-1, a lot of people weren't believers, just scoring 13 offensive points the prior 2 weeks. And for me, when you talk about the Giants and maybe moving forward, this is a team last night when you talk about Eli Manning. He's been releasing the ball this year nearly a second quicker than in years past. It's that offensive system. Last night, that wasn't the case. He reverted back to holding the ball too long, and it really showed, you know, Philadelphia getting pressure. It'll be interesting to see moving forward. Victor Cruz, I know a lot of people will think that's a huge loss. To me, at the very most, half a point. But you get Odell Beckham Jr. in there, who's now acclimated to things. It'll be his third game heading into Dallas, and I think he'll pick up things just fine in place of Cruz.
And before we talk about the Giants and what it means to them moving forward, since we have seen a marked shift from the look-ahead lines to exactly what the number opened against the Cowboys, one last team I was interested to get your take on. I know you talked about the Lions earlier and how the math guys made them a 3-point favorite against some sharp money that was out there. A couple of the groups that we talked to, we know, laid Minnesota on the money line. I was in that mix myself, along with sitting on a Giants ticket. It didn't quite work out the way I drew it up. But you look at the Lions defensively, I think, is what really jumped off the page of me. The much maligned secondary seemed to perform admirably against Teddy Bridgewater and a struggling Vikings team. But again, that defensive line dominated from start to finish and really showed me an awful lot for a Lions team who may struggle for an offensive identity while they're down some playmakers.
Yeah, absolutely. I think this Detroit team is really coming along on the defensive side of the ball. I think an upgrade, obviously, in the offseason at the coaching position, which is very key. But right now they're relying on their defense, and it just pitched an absolute great performance on the road. And I think a lot of people in years past talk about this Detroit secondary. It can be exposed. Right now it's one of the top secondaries in all of football. Now, obviously, that's attributed to a good pass rush, a good front four. Moving forward, though, this Detroit team, I think as they continue to get healthier, will obviously be a really, really strong contender and maybe a team that a lot of people aren't talking about that will have some value moving forward once they get healthy. Can Stafford take the next step? That'll be the question there. But the defense has just been absolutely lights out.
Yeah, and they'll have their hands full this week. They get a Saints team off a bye as a 2.5-point favorite. Again, another contest that we'll talk about more in depth on Thursday as we get closer to Sunday's kickoff. As far as those look-ahead lines, which we know become a great tool, and to the credit of a lot of our loyal listeners, they actually were clamoring for them as I didn't post them like I normally do on Wednesday nights. We're up on Friday, and you look at that Cowboys-Giants game. Of course, Dallas off the win against Seattle. We've seen teams that beat the Seahawks actually perform relatively well straight up in the game following that. Of course, against the spread, a much different animal. Cowboys were projected to be, they opened as a 3.5-point favorite on the advance lines. Now we see in the market, amid the Giants' struggles against Philadelphia, the injury to Victor Cruz, you're looking at Dallas as a 5.5, even a 6-point favorite at a lot of shops out here in the desert.
Yeah, you said look-ahead line had the Cowboys a 3.5-point favorite here. They obviously show very well on Fox, which got massive ratings, out to almost a 20 rating, so a lot of people watched it. Dallas, you know, is America's team, regardless of what people think. When they get good, the viewership is there. Giants, Sunday night in front of a national audience, lay an egg. So we're going to see this move that way at some point, though. The Giants are going to be the side here. At 6, that might be the number, but I think if you wait long enough, you might get a better price. God forbid this goes to 7. I mean, that'll just be ridiculous. I think the Giants are even the side here if you can get a 6 right now.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see if there are some 6.5s that pop in the market for a potentially cheap buy to 7. This game setting up very similarly to what we saw the Cowboys do against the Houston Texans. As you talked about, a great opportunity to buy a divisional foe in I won't call it a must-win for the Giants, but a bounce-back spot where they're a little bit undervalued. A game between the Ravens and Falcons also kind of caught my attention. I had a chance to watch the Falcons in detail. Rewatched the game again this morning, was not impressed by anything I saw. You saw Baltimore go on the road and absolutely dominate Tampa. Joe Flacco, 5 touchdown passes the first 16 minutes. The Ravens on the look-ahead lines, -5. Now you're looking at Baltimore, -7. Do we agree with where this number's gone, or is that, again, more perception, or is it really some of the faults that the Falcons need to address?
And this is a Falcons team that we were down on coming into the season. We were down on them last season. They haven't really rectified any of their issues. Defense still a problem. Offensive line still a problem. And last week, when you can't get any offense generated against the Chicago Bears defense at home in a place that you've really shown well, even in poor times, this is a really tough spot for me. Baltimore, obviously, great home field advantage. Flacco's much better at home. although he had a great game on the road this past week. 6.5, 7, it does feel right to me. It doesn't feel like that big of an overreaction. Atlanta, just tough spot on the road. And, you know, we talked about it. At some point, what do we think Atlanta is? We weren't high on them coming in. Showed well the first few weeks. Last week, I thought they would respond well. And when they're not responding well at home, it's going to be extremely tough to get them to respond well on the road.
Yeah, I think this has the potential to snowball, much like Atlanta's season did last year. All of a sudden, that 56-14 drubbing of Tampa, which made us think that everything was okay down there in Atlanta, appears to be a distant memory, something in the rearview mirror. And one last game, not so much because there's a discrepancy in the advance lines versus what the market is showing right now, but Jets-Patriots. I mean, we've read about the Jets. Nobody really wants to back them. We saw people running around on Twitter celebrating the Geno Smith pick six like they had capped that game perfectly. Hey, to their credit, they were able to cash a ticket, but anyone who believes Denver was the right side in that game, including Floyd Mayweather, has a very different outlook on the way they handicap football than you and I. How do we go about trying to accurately reflect some of the Jets' struggles in our power numbers right now, especially as their road ahead doesn't seem to get any easier amid this five-game losing skid?
We've talked about this on the podcast, two teams that I think are tough to gauge, the Colts with Andrew Luck, and a lot of people don't think that's a good team. With the Jets, I know they're not extremely talented on the offensive side of the ball, but it is a team with talent, and people like to... You know, it's tough power numbers gauging Geno Smith. That's really the issue. How bad is Geno Smith? And a lot of people think he's just that bad. When you talk about this spot, though, public spot, as great as New England's looked the last 2 weeks, recreational bettors will be all over New England laying 10 on a Thursday night. You like the Jets and how they've played New England historically the last few seasons. This is a team that's given New England some problems. You're going to have to do some reading. Is this a spot where the Jets have just absolutely quit? I don't think they've quit on a national stage in front of the entire audience in a standalone spot like this. To me, again, and I know, shoot me in the head, you probably have to look towards the Jets again with double digits and a national spotlight like this. I can't see that being a horrible spot for the Jets. Extremely tough team to gauge, though.
And a number sitting at 10 right now, it would be interesting to see how high this price can actually climb as we get closer to game day. As you allude to, standalone spot, we know that there will be an emphasis on some public money potentially impacting this number. I'd be hard-pressed to see any of the sharper guys out there who like the dog get involved this early, maybe wait till that number climbed as high as 10.5. Speaking of the sharp public divide, we'll get to the Monday Night Football game now, but just to reset for you, the man on the other end of the line, he of Pain Insider fame, you can follow him on Twitter at just that name or see his great work at paininsider.com. I'm your co-host, Todd Furman. You can see my work at toddstake.com, or for college football fans listening in, you can catch my work on my Wednesday column, Wednesday's Winners and Losers, available on outkickthecoverage.com. And Payne, we talked earlier about books being in a precarious position. The cherry on top would appear to be the San Francisco 49ers taking roughly 85% of the action, and this number sits at 3 minus 20 minus 25. We've seen some recreational shops as high as 4.5, but where do we go about starting to handicap this 49ers-Rams showdown later this evening?
This is going to be a tough one, obviously. You know, Monday night, big game. You'd like to side with the books. I do believe St. Louis is the side, especially at 3.5. And when you look at some of these divides, and I don't like to really call out any of the books, you're looking at one of probably the squarest book there is dealing a 4.5 right now, where you're dealing, when you're looking at a Pinnacle, who's dealing 3. It's pretty clear where professional money has come in on this side. It's clear that the books are taking a stance on this side. They're going to need St. Louis to not only cover this number, but they would like them to win the game outright, destroy all pending parlays, moneyline parlays, teasers, things of that nature. So I agree. I'm going to be on St. Louis at some point in this game, and I think that's the side to look at.
You know, calling out a book for booking mainly to recreational customers isn't going to help our cause with sponsorship if we eventually look to go down that road. So we're going to have a little talk off the air about the terminology you choose to approach some of these books in the online specter.
See what I can do.
As far as the total is concerned in this game, we did see Chris open 42.5. Pinnacle used a 43.5 on the open. We've seen the number tick up as high as 44. You and I talked about this game at great length earlier in the week about which way we thought it would trend. Austin Davis, to his credit, hasn't been one synonymous with explosive plays, but he's also played more the role of game manager, staying within himself, understanding the weapons at his disposal. Where do we think this total goes as we get closer to kickoff?
It's going to be interesting to see this. We know there are some sharp money that came in early on this game. The over makes sense when you really dig into this deep enough. I know if you look at the trends and you're going to see San Francisco being an under team, you're going to see St. Louis being an under team. But when you really dig into this, San Francisco, I don't think their defense is what most people think it is. They're still having trouble getting to the quarterback. When you talk about St. Louis and that defense, really an overrated unit, can't stop the run, can't stop the pass. Maybe that'll change on Monday night with some motivation in a really must-win spot. So that'll be interesting to see. Austin Davis, really just more than anybody expected, 68% completion rate, which is just out of this world. San Francisco, the secondary has come around recently, but I think Austin Davis will have enough success here. I initially liked the over in this. But right now, when you're looking at a 44, the key number right now in the NFL is 43, so we've gotten past that number. I think at some point, though, there is a group of professionals that will look at this game and say, Monday night, two division foes, they're used to, you know, each other, and they're going to come under. So I think we're going to see split action on this total. I don't think it's going to continue to climb too much.
And for those scoring at home, you do have double revenge working in the favor of the Rams. They were embarrassed on national TV on a Thursday night last September in this building, losing 35-11 in a similar spot with similar numbers, total a little bit lower than went on the road to San Francisco, were able to cover as a pretty heavy underdog, losing that one 23-13. So it will be interesting to see exactly what we get from the Rams. And if you pull anything away from their performance against Philadelphia after watching the Eagles against the Giants, maybe something to build on for Jeff Fisher and company there. Much like you, Payne, I'm going to wait this game out, try and grab 3.5, maybe even a cheap 4 here in the city if it eventually pops, but think it'll be hard-pressed to get there. Any parting remarks as our loyal listeners go back to the drawing board trying to handicap this week's games before we'll all reconvene later this week on Thursday?
No, I think you covered pretty much everything, and I agree with you. I think looking for that 3.5 or 4 in the city is a good spot, Coach Fisher. He is strong as an underdog, 91-63 against the spread lifetime as an underdog. I agree with you there. And one thing that you did forget, we got a lot of listeners across the border. So happy Thanksgiving to all the folks in Canada.
That's a very good point. And as we record this podcast on Monday afternoon, hopefully everyone is glued to their sets watching Winnipeg take on Edmonton, the hidden gem in the handicapping market, betting the CFL. But I don't think a podcast will be in our near future for that particular sport. For Payne Insider of PayneInsider.com, I'm your co-host, Todd Furman. Thanks for listening to the Monday edition of the Bet the Board podcast. And remember, using the hashtag AskBetTheBoard, we'll be happy to answer any and all of your questions. Stay away from the game specific stuff, more about theory and some of the handicapping methods the professionals use to get themselves to the window each and every Sunday throughout the course of the fall.